Buzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode 81 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation become even more innovative. In this episode, my guest is Angela McDonald of The Business Room. Angela specializes in business systems and processes, so of course I was excited to be able to explore this topic with her. Full disclosure, I have worked with Angela on some joint venture initiatives, most recently our first Fast Business Mastery retreat in Thailand. She's a very driven and talented individual with a passion to serve people and help people and their businesses to grow. I've always enjoyed delving deeply into a topic with her, so without further ado, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Angela McDonald of The Business Room. Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to have with me today on this episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from just down the road from me in Drysdale on the beautiful Bellarine Peninsula in Australia, Angela McDonald from The Business Room. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Angela.
Thank you, Jürgen, and thank you so much for inviting me.
It's a privilege to have you here as our guest today. Now, The Business Room, make your business simple, effective, and efficient, providing operational solutions, business operational solutions specifically tailored for each business.
That's correct.
So, you know, I'm really looking forward to learning a lot more about that with you today, Angela. So let's go and explore that. But before we do that, I'd actually like to find out a little bit more about you as a person. So tell us what you wanted to do when you were a young girl.
Well, probably my earliest memory of what I wanted to be, well, the thing is I've never known what I want to be when I grow up, and I still don't. It's a work in progress for me, but my earliest memory of wanting to be something was a vet. I was absolutely passionate about animals, and as far as I was concerned, I was going to save the world one animal at a time.
Right, okay. And when did you decide that vet wasn't for you?
When it came time to probably have a pet of mine put to sleep, and I thought, no, that's not part of the plan. That wasn't part of the beauty of it, or the interest in it was about keeping them alive, not having to see them end their lives.
Hmm. Yes, well, I think I'd be concerned at cutting things open.
Yes.
Even giving an injection would be a challenge for me.
Oh, no, I think I could possibly enjoy that one.
Yeah.
Depending on the patient.
So where did your journey lead you then once you realised that vet wasn't the right way?
Well, look, I headed off in lots of different directions. I grew up thinking, and I love my parents for this, but nothing was beyond the realms of possibility for me. If I wanted to be something, if I chose to be Prime Minister, then that was what I was going to be. If I chose to be Queen of England, then that was what I was going to be. There was no boundaries. As far as my parents were concerned, I was capable of doing anything I wanted to do or be anything I wanted to be. So over the years, my interests and my desires obviously changed, and I went through a patch where I wanted to be a hairdresser. I went through a patch where I wanted to be a Prime Minister, which was really quite interesting at the time because I knew nothing about politics. I just thought that person earns a lot of money and they're very famous. So I'll do that. Thank you very much. But really, I guess it was my work experiences that I had that led me to where I am now. And I had such a diverse experience across industries and jobs, but always in an administrative or management function. It became relatively clear where my strengths lay, and I guess I headed in that direction.
Okay, so you ended up in the corporate world, is that right?
That's correct, yes. I started out with a chartered accountancy firm as their junior, so I was the runaround girl. I ran and did the banking, and I ran and took the tax returns to our local tax branch. And from there progressed into being part of the typing pool, which was a group of typists who typed up tax returns and depreciation schedules and all of that sort of thing, and relieving on reception. and worked my way up through there till I was the assistant to the senior partner. And that was in a small town called Horsham in Victoria. And when I left that particular job, it was because I was curious and thought, I can do more, I can do more. But I didn't believe I could do more in Horsham, so I moved to Melbourne and started working at the Children's Hospital, the Royal Children's Hospital. And it was quite the experience, because it went from being, or I went from being, you know, the most senior person in a small chartered accountancy practice in a small town, to being effectively the most junior person in the executive office at the Royal Children's Hospital. And again, worked my way up through there to be the assistant or the private secretary to the deputy chief executive. And I did that for a number of years until he left and then I left. So I've just gone from one thing to the next, but always building up to the, in my mind, the next level. What was the next appropriate step for me? What was going to give me more skills? What was going to give me more interest and more variety?
Mm. Yeah, I really like that approach of lifelong learning, and I have to be transparent and say that I've known Angela and worked with Angela quite a bit, so I know that that's definitely one of your core values.
Oh, it is indeed.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned, you know, going from a small organisation, being a big fish in a small organisation, and then suddenly being a small fish in a large organisation. What were some of the things that were big learnings or big awakenings for you as you made that transition?
I guess probably, again, because I grew up in a small town, I tended to have blinkers on, like a lot of people will do. So you only see what's immediately around you. But then when you move from a small town to a city like Melbourne, and you see, one, you don't know everybody in that town, and you can walk down the street, smile at everybody, they're not automatically going to smile back. They don't know your family. They don't know your friends. And you become a little fish in a very big sea. And so then it's about, wow, how many opportunities are there here? And if I've chosen this particular opportunity, what else is there out there for me? What are my options? What else can I learn? How can I become integral in this? How can I have a really important part to play in this? Another one of my values, I guess, which this is kind of leading me to, is giving back. I always want to be in a position where I'm making a difference to someone or to a business. That's where I get my warm fuzzies, is if I know that I'm able to help make a difference. So I guess in all of my learnings and in all of my growth through various careers that I've had, it's always been about, where can I make the most difference?
Hmm. Yeah, I really like that. Now, you're a big systems and process person, and I guess the Children's Hospital probably prepared you for that in a lot of ways, a big organisation where there would have been a lot of systems and processes to manage. So how did you decide that that was going to be your focus and how you were going to make a difference to other businesses when you started the business room?
Well, interestingly enough, yes, there was lots of processes and procedures around what happened within that hospital and the way it operated. But what I also noticed, and have noticed pretty much everywhere else I've worked, particularly in the larger corporations, is yes, there are those processes and procedures, but they're either hopelessly out of date and no longer effective, or there's just no one keeping track of them and updating them and keeping them current. So lots of things would happen where the process that may have been created for it was hopelessly out of date. For example, when I was at the Children's Hospital was when computers were first introduced. So we were working on typewriters, and then all of a sudden we're working on these great clunky computers using WordStar. And so there had to be new processes written and created around that. And we were all kind of flying blind. So one of the things that I did was that I started to just take notes and create processes and shortcuts and procedures around how we should be using it and how we should be filing the information when we actually created it. Obviously, there was stuff that had to go into medical records, but a lot of what we did was around the management of the hospital, not so much around the patients. So we were able to create our own pathway there. And I don't know that I particularly recognised it at that point as a strength of mine. It was just something that came naturally to me to do. And I just seem to have done that everywhere I've worked since. And it was actually a friend of mine that I was working with who said to me one day, you know, this really is your strength, is systemising businesses, creating processes and procedures and saying, this could be done better if we did this, or is there a shortcut or a more effective or a more efficient way of doing this? And it's just a natural inclination of mine to go looking for that. And so she said to me, you know, you really should be using this as a business for yourself and running with that, because it's not something that comes naturally to everybody. Mm. So I guess that's really where I started off my business from.
All right. So tell us a little bit about the business room then, and what sort of things you do with businesses to help them systemize and prioritize and make their business run efficiently and effectively.
Okay, well, there's a few things that I do, and it really depends on what a client asks of me. Some businesses, and I quite enjoy doing this, have said to me, we're not sure if the way we're operating overall is terribly efficient. We find that our staff aren't following procedures, or there are shortcuts taken and things get missed, and, you know, well, we're bleeding money where we shouldn't be bleeding money, and productivity's down. We keep putting on more staff, but we're not getting more and more done. Can you have a look and tell us what you think? And so I'll go into a business and just look at the daily operations. So I'll talk to the management first and get their opinion. Then I'll just go and sit with the team members and ask them about what they do day to day and watch them in action, and what ask them what their frustrations are, or if there's procedures that they think need changing, just how they go about their business. And then I'll go away and think about that business and come up with ideas to make their lives easier. This is the staff at the front, if you like, the pointy end, the ones who are dealing with the customers or dealing with the day-to-day operations, not so much the management, and how I can make things better for them, which in turn goes up the line, increases productivity, gives the business consistency, often means that staff can be redeployed into other areas because they don't need the number of staff they've actually got. They just need a system that works. And I'll put that into a report for them with some suggestions, and I'll do what I like to call a risk analysis snapshot, where I look at where I see the, what area of the business, where I perceive a weakness or an area that can be improved, what that area is, what the risk is if they don't make any change there, a recommended band-aid fix, if you like, if they need something in a hurry while they work on a longer-term fix, and a long-term fix. And then I also measure that against how it will impact on sales, on marketing, on productivity, on all the various different areas, customer service, how that change that I'm recommending will impact on all those things. And so that can measure it and say, well, yes, that's something that we think is worthwhile doing. And then they'll either say, Ange, can you help us put that in place? Or they'll find an expert if it's outside of my realm. It might be something that, for example, I might suggest that they have contracts where they don't have any. And that's a legal field. Now, I don't give legal advice except to say you need contracts.
Yeah.
So they might then engage someone, and it might be someone I recommend through my network of people and my partnerships and alliances that I've formed, or it might be someone that they already know or, you know, research and seek out for themselves. It's probably the main part of what I do. But the other thing that I do is I create customised systems for people. So I guess if you're talking small business and they can't afford the major software perhaps that they might think they need to run their business effectively, sometimes I can create a stopgap for them, something that will work until they reach that point where they believe they can then invest, that their future is sound, and they can invest in dedicated software for what they're doing. And it's just customising or tailoring things to their need. And that's where I get to play in things like Google Apps, which I love, and Microsoft Excel, which I also happen to love. At the moment I'm creating, or I have created, a construction software package. And I created this probably 5 years ago in Microsoft Excel for a small operator. And construction payroll is quite different to your run-of-the-mill payroll, which your, I like to call them generic financial packages offer. So, for example, Xero, QuickBooks, Mile, those sort of financial accounting packages usually have a payroll system that runs with it. But those payroll systems don't cover some of the things that are unique to the construction industry and some of the perks and benefits that people get and have to have reported on their payslip and have to accrue and have recorded. So to get specific construction payroll made, unless you're a larger construction company, can be quite expensive. So I've created quite a simple version of it in Excel. Now, I've not touched that for 5 years, and all of a sudden I've got someone asking for that again. And so I'm revisiting that at the moment and making the changes, obviously, you know, to tax tables and all of that sort of thing, but also just changes to make it better, more efficient, more effective, quicker, easier to use. And I love doing that. I love playing in that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's interesting. You mentioned something early on around, you know, one of the issues being staff not following procedures.
Yes.
And then you talked about, you know, it's one of the problems there is that the procedures might be completely out of date or incomplete, or there's changes to the business that they're not relevant anymore, or the staff don't even know about them, perhaps.
Correct.
What do you see as the biggest challenges there in terms of, because I hear this all the time, you know, we've got all these procedures documented, but people don't follow them.
Yeah, document, schmocument, I say. manuals, the old process and procedure manuals, they're just a thing of the past. And, you know, if someone is not learning by reading, if they're not someone who likes to learn by reading, if they're someone who's hands-on and would rather do the do than read about it and follow an instruction that way, then your manual's just going to sit there and gather dust. When a crisis happens, for want of a better word, when someone needs to know something quick, smart, they might have a customer standing in front of them and they don't know how to deal with it. They don't want to go hunt out the manual from the dusty back office, go through the contents looking for the particular thing that they need and not find it, so then have to see if they flick through page by page by page until they can find it and find a procedure that's hopelessly out of date and uses technology perhaps that they're no longer using. These things need to be live, they need to be fluid, and they need to be done by the people who are actually performing the task. Quite often processes and procedures have been written by people at, say, middle management level who say, this is the way we think it should go, and they'll miss steps. They'll say, yes, well, it should do this and it should do that, and then you should do this and then you should do that. But in between all of that, they're not saying, okay, so we think you should log this in this particular system. They're not giving you the login and the password and the instructions on how to actually use that piece of equipment and what parts you need to fill in and why it's important and how it affects the flow of everything else. The people who are actually at the coalface, the people who are doing that job, usually know far more, and they know all the problems that are going to be encountered. You need to involve those people in creating the processes and the procedures. So for me, it's like your roundtable discussion. Let's get all parties involved and say, okay, how does this work? Run me through how we do this particular function. Tell me why it's important that we do it this way. And then throw some what ifs in. What if this happened? But what if that happened? Frequently asked questions, if you like. And then map that into, well, you can do it as a flow chart, or as I know you love to use things like mind maps, Jürgen, which are great. But put that into a visual picture of how things should flow. And then let your team create the process themselves. And whether they do that by recording it as a video on their phone, this is how we do it step by step, or by using some of the great software that's out there now that will record your computer screen so that you can see it actually happening live using your own package, your own information, your own software that records it and records your voice as well. Whether you're listing it down step by step, whether it's just a voice recording, however it needs to be done, you can do it all of those ways so that everybody can have an option as to how they follow that information and store it in a simple, easy to access, easy searchable place. So no longer your written manual, but for example, I love Google Drives and Google Sites. So if you've got an intranet that you can create so quickly and so easily using Google Sites, and then you can actually give access to people at different levels of what they can access and what they can't, they just type it into the search, same as you do in Google, on your Google search engine. You type in, how do I do this? And it's just going to bring it up instantaneously. It's right there in front of them. It's accessible from their phone, from their tablet, from their computer screen, from everywhere. That's just the way it should be.
Yeah, there's a lot of great advice there. I mean, I really love the idea of getting the people that are going to run the process or do the tasks involved in the process of them having input into the process, even to the extent that they actually write it.
Correct.
And then do the process improvement. So our approach is pretty much along those lines. I tend to hand that off as soon as I can.
And I think, realistically speaking, my experience has been, if you ask the person doing the job to create the procedure, one, they're more likely to follow it, and two, they're more likely to keep it current. They have ownership of that particular process and procedure, and they will just automatically, it would seem, go looking for ways to improve that themselves and keep it updated.
That's right, yeah. And I find that, if somebody writes a process, this is the way it should be, and then try to get people to follow the process the way it should be, particularly if there's, if it's quite different to what really happens, then there's a huge barrier to overcome. Whereas if you start off with, okay, you write the process the way you do it right now.
Yes.
And then let's look at that and say, is there a better way to do that? And then we'll modify the process from there. That, to me, that works a lot better.
Yes, it does. And then if you're involving people at all levels there, then someone who perhaps is impacted from that procedure if something doesn't happen from it can say, yes, well, when you're doing that, remember that I get the end product of that and then I have to do this with it. So we really can't afford to miss this particular step or this particular step. And it gives everybody an understanding of how the whole business runs, not just their little part in it, but how their little part in it impacts the overall day-to-day operations.
That's right. And the other point you made there, which I think is a really important one, is having something easily accessible and quick and searchable.
Yes.
Which, in today's world of the internet is so easy to do.
Oh, that's fine.
So many systems out there that provide that easy access.
Yes.
All right. So in terms of your own processes and particularly the sales process, I'm interested in how you find people that have that need that you can help.
Okay. That's been a work in progress for me. Up until I moved to Geelong, I was in Melbourne and moved down here to Geelong in the Bellarine Peninsula. I had quite a network of people through all the different jobs that I'd held while I was in Melbourne, all the different businesses I'd been in, who they actually found me work on. They would ring me up and say, look, I've just been talking to so-and-so and he's got real problems with this, this and this, and I instantly thought of you because I thought you could help him. Would you give him a call and see if you can help? Would you be interested in doing that? So I amassed clients through referral in Melbourne. But in 2009, we moved down here to Geelong. My husband was working with the Transport Accident Commission and he moved from Melbourne to Geelong. And so to save the commute, we decided timing was good, let's make the move. And we moved down here. Now, I had no network whatsoever here in Geelong. So I travelled backwards and forwards to Melbourne, working that way until I decided this isn't ideal. I really need to establish myself within this community. I want to establish myself within this community and I want to get to know people here. So I involved myself in BNI, Business Networking International. It was actually recommended to me by another lady down here who I work quite closely with. And I joined BNI, this business referral network, probably 15 months ago. And through that, I've got to know a number of people in a number of businesses. And in getting to know those people and discussing their business and my business with them, again, I've started to get referrals through them. The other way that I get business is through people like business coaches and accounting firms who have the clients that need the kind of help that I can offer. So accountants obviously are working with compliance and with tax compliance and with finance and with perhaps business structure and that sort of thing. But they might say, look, I've got this client who's, you know, been plodding along quite well, and irrespective of the advice I give them around their financial figures and growth, they just can't seem to get it happening. I wondered if you could go in and have a look at their operations and see if you can help them. And it might be training their staff, it might be looking at their processes and procedures, it might be doing a financial cleanup. Their books, for example, their books of account might be such a mess. Now, it's really not worth an accountant's time or money to do bookkeeping. That's not what they're trained to do. They give advice at a higher level. So I can go in there and have a look at them and say, yep, let's clean this up and work with the team and get that happening. So I get referrals, or I partner with business coaches and accountants and people in those kind of advisory fields who can identify and send clients my way.
Mm. Yeah, that's a pretty comprehensive kind of approach. It's based very much on referrals and partnerships, isn't it?
It is. Look, I think referral is the best way to get business. There's lots of ways to get business, let's face it. But I think referral, when it comes through referral, you're already pre-qualified. Half the sales work has already been done for you because someone else is vouching for you and saying, she's your girl. I know that she has the skills that you need. And that person that's referring you has already built up a trustful relationship with their client. So they're then saying, extend the trust here. The work's half done. So for me, that's just the best way of getting business. It may sound lazy, but it's the best way of getting the business.
Well, I think it's efficient, right?
Correct.
Yeah, efficient and effective. Yeah,
and exactly.
So the partnership one is interesting because obviously we're doing some work together and you know, we've just run a planning retreat in Thailand together with a number of other businesses as well.
And wasn't that fabulous?
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. So I'm still trying to adjust to the cold weather from Thailand. And last week I was speaking on the Business Systems Summit where I co-hosted, and I was interviewing Pauline Martin-Brooks, who's specialty is building partnerships and, you know, defining that. And it was a fascinating interview. So a big shout out to Pauline, if you're listening. It was a fascinating interview because her approach to partnerships is very much like what I do around generating new business. And so it dawned on me that, you know, the structure for building partnerships and, you know, you could take this into networking, the structure for building your networks is all basically the same type of framework, so you can systemize it. So it brings us back to talking about systems.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And look, for everything, I think the thing to understand behind everything, there is a structure to everything you do. And if you get that structure right, you can only go ahead in leaps and bounds. There's no holding you back. So that if you put a structure around your processes and procedures, if you put a structure around everything you do, then if the structure doesn't work, you change it. Structure or a strategy, I guess, is what I'm saying. So, for example, even just cleaning your teeth, you have a strategy as to how you clean your teeth, when you do it, at what time, what prompts you to start that strategy off. When you put the toothbrush in your mouth, where do you start? On the right-hand side of your mouth, on the left-hand side of your mouth? et cetera, et cetera. One day you go to the dentist and he says, look, you're not cleaning your teeth properly because, you know, at the back of your teeth here, you're missing it every time. Scratch that strategy, recreate the structure, put a new strategy in place. So you replace that strategy, works fine, off you go. So yeah, there's structure and strategy to everything. And if you get that right, then there's no holding you back.
Hmm. All right. So what do you see as the biggest challenge in your own business? What's the thing that keeps you awake at night?
Besides hot flashes. Look, I think for me, it's fear. It's a fear. It's fear of not getting it right or not getting it done. Not getting it right is probably not the right word. Not being able to create what I want to create for someone. Not being able to give them the help that I desperately want to give them. So it may be that I've talked to a client, I've been there and they need a customised system. And it'll be a question around my own ability. Can I deliver that? Can I deliver it in a way and in a time frame that's ideal for them? And so I'll just lie awake thinking about it and you know, okay, what am I going to do? What's my first step going to be? What's the structure around this? How am I going to find that information? How am I going to create that? And that's where the internet comes into play for me. Love the internet.
Google how to.
Exactly. And yeah. Oh gosh, that's got to be the greatest innovation ever, I think, is the internet. It's just opened up so much possibility for everything, possibility for new business streams, for new software, for interaction, for, you know, that everything we get so quickly now where you plot off to the library, find a book, read it, could be out of date, might not be. Mm. Everything's just at your fingertips no matter where you are, whether you're on your phone or at your computer or where you are.
Yeah, that's right. One of my favourite search terms is how to, and then insert whatever it is.
Correct. Behind
that. And usually that'll give me an answer at some point. You know, sometimes it takes a little longer than other times if it's a really esoteric thing, but
yes, and sometimes you have to be a little bit more specific or a little more careful with your wording to get the kind of response that you're looking for. But all that takes is a little bit of patience and thinking, and you get there. Mm.
And the other thing, you know, we've been talking about systems and processes quite often. You know, if I search for something, how to do something in particular, somebody will have published a process.
And I think,
well, that's pretty good. I'll steal that. There's no sense in reinventing the wheel.
Well, that's right. And, you know, for me, I did courses in Excel, you know, your introduction to Excel, your intermediate Excel and your advanced Excel. There are still things that aren't covered in those courses. Those courses can only contain so much information. Hmm. So when I'm doing something particularly what I consider to be tricky in Excel and I'm looking for the right formula, how to is my go-to.
Yeah.
How do I do this? How do I use the if function and VLOOKUP and AND in the same formula function? And there'll be someone who's done it, someone who comes back with the answer and says, try this.
Hmm.
Just the best thing.
Yeah. And of course, with the internet, I mean, we're only a half an hour's drive apart at the moment, but we're still using the internet to communicate. And the last couple of episodes, I've interviewed people in New York, so you know, and connected with people that I didn't know right across the world, which is quite amazing.
Indeed, that's the internet for you.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions. Hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers and inspire people to do something awesome today.
Well, we'll give it a shot,
yeah. All right. So what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I think they need to be flexible. They've got to open themselves to possibility and they've got to be curious. You have all these three things happening and the world's your oyster.
That's great advice. Yeah, I love that. Curious, open to possibility and flexible. So be adaptable to whatever.
Absolutely.
You might be able to achieve there. So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
Google. Just looking at the way other people do things, looking at other people who do similar things to what I do and seeing what works for them, what doesn't work for them. And then saying, okay, if I did that, how could I do it better? How could I do it a little differently? What more could I offer?
That's great advice. Now, I'm sort of just looking to my left here on one of my whiteboards, and I've written up their model, the masters, which kind of yes. encapsulates what you're saying there, doesn't it?
Exactly. And it doesn't have to be one master. You can combine several.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So what's your favourite tool or system for improving your own productivity and allowing you to be more innovative?
Well, it's definitely internet and software again. Google Apps. I love Google Apps. I love systems that talk to one another, systems that put everything in one place, communicate and have a search facility that makes life easy for me. So anything that makes life easy for me, that I can access from anywhere, you know, that's going to be my ultimate productivity tool.
Yeah, that's good. So Google Apps and other software that talks to one another. I think, you know, the trend these days is to get things really interconnected well, and I certainly look at that. So I found something this morning that I thought sounded really interesting, but then I realised that the connectivity that I had in the way I was doing it currently would be lost going to this new tool, so therefore it died straight away.
Yes, well, there's a friend of ours, Jürgen, that we share, and her ultimate aim is automation, to have almost everything in her business automated. And I think, you know, that's just a great approach, because that just frees you up to spend time working on your business and doing more important things than, you know, the day-to-day grind.
That's right, yeah. All right. What's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Look, that still to me comes back to accountability, and the accountability can be done in many ways, but again, through the internet, through the systems that you have where you can actually share software, you have more than one login to different things. So a project or task management software where you can collaborate with people all over the world or anywhere and share that information and share the resources. Everybody can see what's been done, what's going on, and where a project is at, and everybody can contribute. Just throw a question in there in real time. Hey, how are you going with that part? Do you need any help? It's all accountability, and I think that's the bee's knees.
Okay, that's great advice. So some of that is the tools you use, and some is the communication and accountability. So
that's correct.
All right, and what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think you have to firstly believe in yourself and believe in your product. And you need to understand what you set out to achieve when you went into business for yourself, what your ultimate aim is. If you've got that ultimate aim, so that I guess is your mission and your vision and your values, what's important to you, and you don't stray from those, you build your business around those things, then you're going to be the best in your game at what you're doing, because you're not being distracted by other things. You're focused on what you're doing, and you're focused on, I suppose, being the difference. Another favourite saying, being the difference that makes the difference. So you have to really believe in yourself and your product, and then go looking for ways to be better all the time.
That's great advice. Yeah, I love that. And it speaks to being yourself, doesn't
yes.
it? Which is because I'm confused in my own mind a little bit now about whether this question is actually really relevant to this, but I'm kind of sticking with it because of consistency. But a lot of people come back and say, well, be yourself because you're different to everybody else. But there is a trend, I guess, that concerns me, where people have this idea of you must differentiate yourself. So, you know, they kind of construct something that might or might not be consistent with their values, their mission, and their vision.
Yeah, that's right. And that's really a distraction. And, you know, if it doesn't fit your values and your vision and your mission, it's going to fail.
That's great advice. All right, so what's the future for you and for the business room?
Oh, endless possibilities there, Jürgen. Look, I'm evolving.
Apart from another event in Thailand next year.
Yes, correct. I'm evolving. And look, when I think back, I always have been. As I said, as a child, I didn't really know what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I still don't. I just want to keep working in the way that I am now, where I can offer ways to businesses to be better, to be more productive, to operate simply, effectively, efficiently, to make businesses hum. That's what I like to do. That's where I get my buzz. So I'm looking at new tools and new opportunities, staying abreast of current technology to and using that current technology to get that help out to people and to get the business coming towards me. So I'm looking at some online training courses. I'm looking at some tools that I can make available to people, customised tools, or things that they can customise themselves. I'm looking at more alliances and partnerships, such as I have with you, Jürgen, and other people who have businesses that vary from mine but are interlaced. We are still all working towards the one aim, which is an overall holistic approach to a person's business. So your focus may be around digital marketing and websites and, you know, getting the message out there on sales and marketing, which is one huge major aspect of business. Mine's around the systems, the processes and the procedures. You know, an accountant will be around finance. Having those partnerships, forming those alliances, and then doing projects together so that we can have that holistic approach to a business and offer them even more value. That's something that really excites me and something I'm desperate to be part of.
Mm. Yeah, it is exciting, isn't it? So, you know, I love working with other businesses together to do something, because often as a small business owner, working on your own kind of gets a bit lonely sometimes. And like you say, you know, you can make so much more impact and deliver so many more benefits to another business, to a client, if you've got those partnerships with a whole range of different skills and strengths.
Yes, and expertise. It's, yeah, that's why would I pretend to be something I'm not? You know, I'm not going to go and give someone marketing advice. That's not my core strength. But gee, I know someone who can do that and do that brilliantly. So if I can use that person and work with them, we bring our own expertise to everything we do, but as a united front for a business.
All right. So that kind of brings me to the next question, which is, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business who business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation and productivity?
Gee, there's not just one thing, really. Mission, vision, values, get them sorted. Mm. Understand what drives you and what you want to achieve, and then never ever move from that focus. Just stay focused on what you want to achieve and work towards that.
That's really good advice. And if somebody has some difficulty with that, go search YouTube for Start With Why by Simon Sinek, because that's a pivotal piece of a pivotal presentation, I think, and read the book as well.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Angela. This has been really fantastic. Now, where can people reach out to you and connect with you and say thank you for all that you've shared with us today?
Well, I have a website, www.thebusinessrforrogermformary.com.au, and through there's a contact page there. I also have a Facebook page. They can contact me through you, Jürgen. Obviously, you know how to get hold of me. I guess if you Google me, you'll find me.
All right. That's great. We'll have links to that in the show notes underneath the podcast episode, so people can just click through and connect with you easily. Now, finally, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast, and why?
Oh, gee, there are so many. It's hard to kind of nail it down. And look, I'm going to start with the Dalai Lama.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, can you introduce us?
Sure. Because, you know, just about everything that comes out of that person's mouth is just inspirational and defining. So I think also, if we come down to a more reasonable level, and you may have already done this, but look, I recently went to one of Dale Beaumont's presentations from the Business Blueprint, he does a similar sort of thing to what I do, but he does it on a major scale. And he's really, really interesting to listen to and to talk to. And I find him quite inspirational. So I'd really love to hear more of what he's got to say.
All right. So Dale, if you're listening to this, and the Dalai Lama, I'm not quite sure how to address him, but if he's listening to this as well, so we'll be in contact to...
I think sir would be a good start.
Yeah, we'll be in contact to get you on the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Angela McDonald. Now, I did see an interview recently with the comedian John Oliver, who interviewed the Dalai Lama. So I figure, well, if he can get a hold of him, why not us?
Look, Jürgen, if anyone can, you can. the fact that some of the people that you've had on your podcasts, and let's just go straight towards the top here and say, Michael E. Gerber, if you can attain that, then the Dalai Lama's absolutely reachable.
But having said that, Dale Beaumont, I'm sure, will be awesome. So Dale, will reach out to you and see if we can get you on a future podcast.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us today, Angela. I've learned a lot. I always enjoy speaking with you, and I've enjoyed this today as well. So I wish you all the best for the future of the Business Room, and we are certainly going to keep in touch.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure, Jürgen.
Thanks.
Okay.
I hope you enjoyed hearing from Angela as much as I did. She certainly is very passionate about systems and processes and helping people grow their business. I guess we have that in common. All the great ideas and tips that Angela shared with us can be found at innovabiz.com.au/thebusinessroom. That is thebusinessroom. All one word, all lowercase, innovabiz.com.au/thebusinessroom. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Angela there. We'd love you to leave comments on the post and tell us what you got out of this episode and also what actions you'll take as a result. Angela suggested I interview Dale Beaumont from the Business Blueprint on a future podcast. So Dale, look out for an email from us with an invitation to the Innova Buzz podcast courtesy of Angela McDonald. To our listeners, thanks for being here. Make sure you subscribe to the Innova Buzz podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts so you'll never miss a future episode. We'd love you to go to one of those and leave us a review as well, just to let us know how we are doing and also to help spread this message to more business owners. If there's anything you'd like us to cover or questions you want answered on a future Innova Buzz podcast or guests you'd like us to interview, please send those ideas to us. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from Innova Biz. Remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and keep innovating.